Call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. The first item of business, I need someone to look over and approve the minutes dated February 3rd of 2011. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Representative Kath moves the minutes for dated February 3rd of 2011. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Before we start on Representative Lemire's bill, as he's moving forward to take the stand, if you will, Representative Lemire, we'll be working on your bill right away. I would like to recognize our friends in the audience from Farmers Union, Day on the Hill. So welcome, everybody. So the Ag Committee here has been taking up the issue of green acres, and we've been working diligently on a bipartisan basis to find a workable solution to green acres. And I'd also like to put in a little plug for your rep here at the Capitol, Mr. Tom Peterson. He does a fantastic job. Absolutely. Tom's a good person, and he does, like I said, a great job. We are going to take up Representative Lemire's bill, and just to make sure we have it before us, Representative Lemire, if you'd just like to move it so we make sure that we run through the protocol correctly.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I move House File 12 and recommend it to pass and be referred to the Tax Committee.
All right. We have the motion from Representative Lemire. Yes, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I just want to note Representative Eakin may need to be excused. He is in a meeting that he got called into. He may make it back. He may not. So,
so
the record to show that.
Absolutely. Thank you. So the record will show that. He will be excused. So members, like we had talked about earlier, we want to make sure that we do our due diligence here, that we fully vet every possible issue that may arise. And you have my commitment here as well today. There will be a few other questions that are going to come up, I'm sure of it. We want to make sure, like I said, to fully vet those. And then we'll make a decision as the committee goes on whether this bill is ready to pass out of this committee and be referred to taxes, or if we need to work on one more day in order to address some of the issues. I would like to have a motion. I'm going to make a motion to suspend the rules so that we can address these to address the amendments. Representative Morrow.
Well, I would if you didn't feel comfortable as chair making a motion, I was going to do
okay.
It for you. So
how about we do that? Representative Morrow makes the motion to suspend the rules. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we do have the bill in front of us. Representative Lemire, I believe we want to work on the DE2 amendment. You want to make a motion to pass the DE2 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make a motion to approve the DE2 amendment.
Okay. Representative Lemire makes the motion to pass the DE2 amendment. Discussion. I'll start off on the discussion. Members, what this is, we had of course, the DE1 amendment. There were a couple amendments that went on to the DE1 amendment. And this is, there's nothing else in this other than the amendments that we already passed. And so this is just to clean things up, so we are working off the DE2 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. So now we're at the DE2 amendment. I would like to pick up where we left off on the A5 amendment. I'd like to move to the A5 amendment. And before I do that, my friends, we have some very special guests in the audience that I saw that just walked in. So allow me to introduce. Oh, they're turning red, I think. But we have Jenny and Laura Ramsdahl. Can you stand up, please? Come on. Please stand up. All right, and I have to point these two out because they are two of my daughter's very best friends in life. So welcome. Thanks for coming, and go home and tell my daughter what a great dad she has, all right? Please. Thank you. Thank you, members. So, all right, I would like to pick up the A5 amendment. And the A5 amendment, what this does is this twofold. We have the 3-year clawback, which would actually be increased to a 5-year clawback. And that would not take effect until May 1st of 2012. So first, I'll speak to the May 1st of 2012 date. Initially, when I brought the amendment forward, we had January 1st of 2011. Talking with the assessors and the department and others, it was recommended that we go out a full year and hit May 1st of 2012. It would allow us some time to prepare people for this, just educate others, and get us ready for this as well. And I want to be clear on the 3-year to 5-year provision also. Anybody that, with the changes that are already made, and I ask that Mr. Hines or anybody else if they want to weigh in, because I want to make sure we're very clear on this, that individuals will now be, once this bill is passed, the intent is that anybody that's already enrolled will come back to the 3 years. The 3-year provision will be in force. Anybody who signs up over this next year will be subject to the 3-year provision. Anybody after May 1st of 2012 will be subject to the 5-year clawback provision. Okay, so that is the intent of the language as well. And the reasons why I'm moving the A5 amendment and asking for the 5-year, and I would like if Mr. Tom Peterson would like to make his way up here as well. I talked to Tom earlier. And to weigh on this as well. And as while Tom's coming up, what I'd like to say is one of the examples that were given about the 3 versus 5 debate, if we're looking at wanting to address urban sprawl, if we're looking at wanting to preserve farmland, any case subject to the pressures of urban sprawl or whatever the case may be, my take is that we can accomplish this better through a 5-year provision other than a 3-year provision. That's one case and one scenario. The other example that was given was that hit home for me is the example where individuals are selling ground up in this 7-county metro area, or you know, up in the metro areas, and then taking those dollars received and coming out and the example that was given, coming out in our neck of the woods and buying up farm ground and bringing up property values that way of farm ground. So that's my take, my explanation on this, and why I'm supporting this provision and subsequently moving the A5 amendment. So I would like to hear testimony from Farmers Union, and I see Tom is up here, so if you'd state your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed, please.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And talking to specifically to this amendment, our policy supports 3 years, but in the interest of compromise and looking at it going forward and some of the arguments have been brought up, we went back and visited with our members about it. And understanding that this is going forward, it's for 5 years, we did not find people that were opposed to that. So as long as for the people that have had the 3 years and have understood the 3 years, it makes sense to them. I think that's okay. And for going forward for 5 years, it's not something we'd be opposed to.
Thank you. I believe we have a question. Representative Paul Anderson.
I didn't know I was first, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I just got off the phone with my local assessor back in Stearns County. Stearns County has the most green acres of any county in the state, or at least the number of parcels. And a concern that we talked about, and I'd like to get a clarification. Now, we talked about new enrollees after May 1st of next year would be subject to the 5-year payback. And we discussed what if the land is sold after next June 1st. Currently, the new owner has to come back in to reapply. So would they be subject then at that time to a 3 or 5 year payback on land in green acres, but having a new owner and having to reapply?
So, Mr. Hines, could you field that question, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, the language specifically talks about when the property was originally enrolled. So it kind of really goes with the property rather than with the property owner. So if the land is under the three-year, even if it changes ownership and still, you know, under the new owner is eligible to be in Green Acres, it would continue to be under the three-acre.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you much. That greatly makes me feel a lot better. Thanks.
Peace in the valley. That's what we're looking for. So thank you, Mr. Peterson. And I see that we have the member from Farm Bureau making the way up front as well. So, Mr. Raddatz, if you could state your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Farm Bureau. And not to take a lot of committee time, but we do support what you're looking at here, what you're doing. We think getting rid of the covenant and the plan is important. We can live with the 3 and the 5 year. And as Mr. Anderson expressed, the way Mr. Hines explained it, I'm even much more comfortable supporting this effort. So we thank the committee for all their hard work.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Raddatz? Seeing none. Any other discussion on the A5 amendment? Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, this is the chair's amendment, correct?
This is the chair's amendment, and so I'd like to once again remind the individuals before we vote. I'm just teasing. It is the chair's amendment. Yes, that's correct, Representative Hansen. So, yeah. All right. Can somebody call Representative Hosh out into the hallway, please? I'm just teasing. Any other debate on the A5 amendment? Representative Hansen.
In all seriousness, Mr. Chair, the transition period between today and May 1st, if there's someone here from revenue or from the assessors, I'd like to hear the practical impact of what that window means in areas where there are not green acres right now. Because if we recognize that the current program has a $55 million shift of people not paying as much as they could, and other people are paying more, our concern is that we would have that shift exacerbated in counties where there may not be green acres. So I'd like some testimony as to what the impact is on that window of time between now and May 1st, 2012, in counties where there currently is fewer enrollees.
Okay. So I see a member from the department moving forward. If you'd state your name, who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is John Hagan. I'm the director of the Property Tax Division. And Mr. Chair, with respect to the question, I think the shift will be very minimal. I think we picked a really good time to resolve this issue where a lot of the property values are down for the hunting and the seasonal recreational lands. So it's probably an optimal time to prevent that shift from occurring. Certainly there'll be a few properties, but I don't see it as a major problem.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, you don't anticipate a rush?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I do not.
Representative Hansen, follow-up? Anybody? Okay, thank you. So, Representative Hansen, you also talked about someone from the assessors. Would that help as well? Do we have anybody from the representing the assessors that would like to come up and speak to Representative Hansen's question as well, please? Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Diving. I'm the Houston County Assessor and a member of the Legislative Committee in MAAL. And I would concur with Mr. Hagan that there wouldn't be that big a rush going on right away, certainly for my county.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions to the A5 amendment? Any other questions? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, that was the A5 amendment. Yes, that is the... All right, we're going to go to the A8 amendment, and I will move the A8 amendment. And I would ask this, members, this is an amendment more for the clarification. And I'm going to ask Mr. Hines, would you explain this amendment to the group, please?
Mr. Chair, this is an amendment that came about from some comments received from the Department of Revenue to the original draft, and it just seeks to clarify a few things that they thought needed clarification. The whole part from lines 1.3 through 1.14 all relate to, they thought it would be better to separately clarify that this land, this provision that allowed land that was removed from the program to come back in, to talk about that it would be 2A land going, could go back into Green Acres, and 2B land would be going into the Ag Preserves. And I guess it was my interpretation of their comments to go ahead and just split a paragraph and make a separate paragraph for the 2A and the 2B. But I think from the standpoint of most of us here, it's just technical. And I, if the department disagrees with my interpretation, they should certainly come forward or would rather see some changes. The next lines, 1.15 to 1.18, is their recommendation that we put in a provision specifically saying that anybody who had already entered into a covenant to get into the Ag Rural Preserves program, that those covenants are all terminated. And then the last changes starting on line 1.20 to 1.24 have to do with the looking at the methodology for putting the valuation on the land. And the line 1.20 simply adds the Association of Assessing Officers to the grouping of who's supposed to be consulted for this study. But then the lines 1.21 through 1.24 relate to their preference that rather than it mandate developing a new methodology, that it be an exploration of alternative methodologies. And I think that summarizes it.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. And I realize that during some of the discussion about the covenants, one of the questions that were raised, in the event someone actually complied, went through all the requirements, that if they chose to remain within that covenants, could they? Is this stating that every one of them is terminated?
Mr. Chair, I believe this would say that would be terminated. We could certainly work with the department to clarify that would be at the discretion of the owner. I think that would probably be something we could just add orally, or maybe somebody, the department might have some suggested language to that. I don't know.
All right. Would somebody from the department like to... Okay, they said they'd certainly work with us on that. We do have a couple questions here. Representative Paul Anderson. No? You're done? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think it would be good to have a choice for the folks who've entered into that, because they may have gone through the process of paying for title changes. And the one question I've had thinking about this is, we've had testimony about the covenants, and I believe the covenants are probably going to be removed, but we didn't really get a good answer on how many people have actually entered into the covenants. And it might be good to get some direct examples of how many people are in the covenants and what the folks who've been working with them might see. Maybe that comes from the assessors, that some people may want to stay in, some people may want to get out. So I think providing a choice, if there's language that can come in to provide a choice, would reflect maybe what's out there.
Okay. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if I might offer an oral amendment to the A8 amendment, and Mr. Hines, you can tell me if I get this right as well, but it would be starting at line 1.18 to delete the word are and to insert the word may be, the words may be, to remove the period after the word terminated, and to insert the words at the election of the property owner, period. Okay. I'm online. I'm sorry. I'm on line 1.18 of the A8 amendment. So it would read, Mr. Chair, subdivision 5 may be terminated at the election of the property owner, period.
Okay. So.
And then if Mr. Hines has thoughts on that.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I think that sounds fine.
Okay. So any discussion, members, on the oral amendment to the amendment? So, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, if we could, I think this is moving in the right direction. If we could get just a little testimony on on the record on this from the assessor.
Okay. And as they're making their way up here, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we need to hear what the impact might be, because it seems as though it requires greater education for the property owners, and just wondering about that.
All right. Point well taken. So, see, we have the assessor here, so please.
Mr. Chair, Tom Dibbing again from Houston County. In my county in particular, I do not have any covenants that have been filed yet. I was aware of the delete all amendment, and my concern was if people started rushing to do the covenants and then have to turn around and delete it. So that was my recommendation to our county, and we do have people that have done the plan. I recommended to the plan writer in my county to do 2C forest management plans, because there's a lot of that's going on right now. So, but I know that adjoining counties have filed covenants. It's not a huge number at this point. I can't really speak for anything north of the cities or whatever. Haven't visited with them to find out where they're at with it. So.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps whether this moves out today or on another day, that's a question. If maybe there could be a little counting before it goes to the tax committee, just on what that is. Because I think getting people caught in something there might be getting an actual number of that might be helpful.
All right. Thank you. And I see Mr. Hagen's coming to the front. If you could address that, please.
Mr. Chair, representatives, with respect to Representative Morrow's original oral amendment, I can't see a downside, I guess. It seems like if everybody has the option to remove their property, there certainly shouldn't be a complaint, and we can't be accused, or legislators can't be accused of forcing people to remove a covenant. I'm guessing everybody would likely remove it, and my sense is we don't know, but my sense is there are not that many covenants recorded at this point in time.
Okay. So, Mr. Hagen, Representative Hansen, to his request about trying to get a handle on the number of people, is that something that your department could provide for us? Or,
Mr. Chair, we certainly could try a survey, and we could how detailed it would be. The more detailed, the more time, but we could do a quick survey to see how many covenants assessors are aware of and report back.
So, and the point is, we don't need it here today, or even for this committee, not necessarily, because this bill will have a number of stops. So somewhere before it hits the House floor, if we could have a good understanding of how many people we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, we'll certainly do that.
Thank you. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about the length of time that the covenant could be terminated. Is it if they don't do it at this point, or by September, by May, can they do it in 2013 or 2015? Or is the covenant forever, or is it that they could change the covenant? That's my question. I don't know who answers that.
So, Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I guess the way the language is sitting right now, since it says the covenant may be terminated at the election of the property owner, I might interpret that any time they could choose to terminate it the way we've got it language right now. I'm not an attorney myself, so it could be that somebody will tell me differently, but that's how I would interpret that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, then I'm just wondering about the value of a covenant.
So, and that's a valid question. That is a valid question. And would anybody, Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would maybe ask Representative Morrow if that May 1st, 2012 deadline for choice is a period when people need to make a decision by. That would give them over a year's time to conclude whether or not they should terminate the covenant.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. I honestly don't have a policy view as to what should be done. I mean, that consistency seems reasonable. I was simply trying to allow those who have covenants who may want to keep them to keep them. I don't know, have enough information to say whether the May 1st, 2012 date is a good one or not. I'm open to the committee's and the testifier's direction.
So, Mr. Hines.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was, you know, I guess to from the way I look at things, it seems like the only reason people have entered into these covenants is to, because they needed to come under the Rural Preserve Program and they wanted to get into the Rural Preserve Program. So if we eliminate that restriction, it's not very clear to me why anyone would want to keep a covenant in place. Somebody can always elect on their own to do a I think we had some testimony to the effect that if somebody does elect to put themselves under a restrictive covenant, that that could result in lower property valuation or lower for tax purposes if it was a quite restrictive covenant, and they could certainly do that before this law was passed or afterwards. But it might just be cleaner to terminate all of these contracts that are all of these covenants that were specifically done to comply with this law, and say if you really want one, you can still do one on your own, and you define it how you want. There's no set prescription for these, but it's not clear to me that somebody might want to stay with this covenant.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, maybe we should do this. Maybe we haven't voted on it. I'll remove the oral amendment, but we have advocates throughout the room who are listening to this discussion. If there's a need to change from are terminated to may be terminated, that certainly could happen at the tax committee. So maybe we invite people to engage in more discussion, more consideration of the implications of 1.7, 1.8, and I'm comfortable having that type of amendment made at the next stage. So I withdraw the oral amendment.
Representative Morrow withdraws his oral amendment to the amendment. Thank you, Representative Morrow. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to get a sense from the assessor again on this issue of the covenants, and you said there weren't very many that in your area, but what your thoughts are for the state.
Mr. Dibby. Making his way up. So, Mr. Dibby, please.
Hi, Mr. Chair. Members, I received information that there's Stearns has about 28 and Rosso is about 26 that have filed covenants already. I would assume that if a member had or if a farmer has filed a covenant, that they would probably want to get it off of their abstract, just because if it sits out there for 20, 30 years and all of a sudden there's a transfer and it happens to pop up, you know, it'll have to be taken care of at that point. So I would assume if you have the opportunity to take it off, that's probably what they would do. Okay.
So thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Dibby, what did it cost the farmer to put this covenant into place to begin with?
Well, the covenant, to file it, I believe it's $46 to file the covenant at the recorder's office, but then they would have to be accompanied by the assessment plan, and that varied from $50 to $200 to $300 to $400 maybe for the assessment plan. So depending on, they might have an assessment plan in place or received one, and they may not have filed a covenant yet on the application process. So
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Deming, what will it cost to have them take it to get out of it?
Mr. Dibby.
I'm not aware. I did ask my recorder that, you know, obviously if you do, I don't know, the instrument that you would use, if it would be a quit claim deed that would take the, you know, take the covenant off or not, that would be the $46, but there are some avenues that you can in the county, depending on county policy, that you can delete that by, you know, taking it off through the county. But that's on a county basis, and this is what my recorder told me.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hines, do you have any idea what it would cost to remove that covenant for the farmer?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I do not have any idea. Perhaps Mr. Hagan.
And I see Mr. Hagan moving to the front.
Mr. Chair, members, John Hagan. I can't say with a lot of certainty, but I'm guessing it would be a small number, like the $46. The actual document is called a release of covenant, and we do it with sustainable forests all the time. So it's certainly not a big number. I would guess it's probably just a clerk cost of around $40, $46, something like that, to release the covenant and get it taken off the land.
Okay. Representative Anderson, follow-up? All right. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so if Stearns County is one of the highest participating counties, and they had 25 covenants, and Roseau had 20. But I'd like some context here, then, if we've got high participating counties that are in the 20s, are we talking statewide up to 500 covenants that have been filed? And then the context I'd like is, we've heard that there were complaints about the covenant, so are there 5 or 50 or 500? If there are 500 people who've gone forward and done this, and we're eliminating the covenant for 50, I have some questions about that. But I'd like some context in how many people statewide, if we are talking some counties with 0, some counties with in the 20s, how many people statewide are we? And maybe that's what we get before the next stop on the committee.
Point well taken, Representative Hansen, and they acknowledged as well. The department shook their head yes. So any other questions to the A8 amendment, members? Okay, ready to vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. All right, we will move to, let's see, well, we move to the what's that? Okay. Representative Eakin, just looking through the different amendments here, would you think it'd be important today, right now, to move to the purpose? Would you like to go there before we go further?
Sure.
Is that all right? Okay. I will move the A9 amendment. The A9 amendment, members, and this amendment here reflects the discussion that we had about the purpose of Green Acres, and we've had a tremendous amount of dialogue around this, and it's been healthy. As you can see on the A9 amendment, it has changed substantially, and I'm just going to read through that here quick. The legislature finds that it is in the interest of the state to encourage and protect farms by mitigating the property tax impact of increasing land values due to non-agriculture economic forces. So, you know, this has changed over the course of time and evolved, of course, taken the consideration or taken the advice from many members here today. With that, I will ask for questions or opening up for questions or comments or so. Anybody? No? Hearing none? Oh.
Well,
Representative Eakin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just think that this is a good amendment, and I encourage members' support. And it is in the interest, as it says, to protect farms, and that is the primary purpose here. And there may be the spinoff of also preserving farmland for a time, but first and foremost, it's to help farmers stay on the land, and I think that it's important that we get this purpose established before we move on and deal with a lot of details about how to get there. But we've already been doing that as well. But that has been the purpose, I think, all along, and I guess I'll save my other comments for later, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Eakin. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only question is about encourage and protect farms, and Representative Eakin referenced it a little bit, but why would we not say farmland instead of farms? I just have that question. You know, why aren't we specific to farmland rather than farms?
So, and, you know, Representative Ward, I think part of the discussion, it's a valid point. It's a valid point. And I think part of the discussion was if we are looking at preserving farmland, and in the event, like the auditor expressed, that this program did not was not successful, and correct me if I'm wrong with the words that I'm choosing, was not successful in preserving farmland. And the question that I raise, that if we have that as the purpose, that this program is to protect and preserve farmland, and if the auditors come back and say we're not accomplishing that goal, then is the whole Green Acres program then in jeopardy? So that's where the discussion was had, and we did take testimony from individuals that were working on this early on, and they said the original intent had to do with farmers and not necessarily the farmland. I mean, it was for farmers. So thank you, Representative Ward, for raising that. Representative Egan.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I would echo that, and also the fact that really I see it as more about tax fairness and allowing farmers to remain on the land as long as they want to remain on the land and farming it, not be forced off by high property taxes. And so that I see as the main purpose. There's an ancillary benefit to having, you know, that farmland for the public also staying in as farmland for that period of time. But first and foremost, it's to help those farmers stay on the land.
Thank you, Representative Eakin. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to focus on the word protect on line 1.7 and get a sense from the committee that the word protect does not mean acquire. Is that correct?
Yes, it does not. Thank you. Anybody else like to comment on that? So, thank you for raising that, Representative Hansen. Absolutely. Any other? Representative Szymanski.
Just kind of tweaked my interest there, and maybe we should say preserve instead of protect, but we've probably been over that issue before.
Yeah. So, yes, we have been over that issue before, but would you like to make, is that a motion? No, it's a suggestion. Okay. Thank you, Representative Szymanski. Any other debate? Any other discussion? Representative Hansen.
I'll move preserve instead of protect.
Representative Hansen moves preserve to replace protect on line 1.7 and replace protect with preserve. Does everybody have the oral amendment? Representative Purcell.
Mr. Chair, could we get the plain definition of those two words put in front of us?
We can ask Mr. Hines, would you like to weigh in, or Mr. Sullivan? They're scratching their heads.
Yes. If I may, there is some import in having usually a court of jurisdiction would defer to Webster or some common definition. That's what I'm looking for. So,
point well taken. So we have anybody like to weigh in? Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I was looking for counsel to give us a bridge out of this. Maybe support, but
so. And as they're discussing this between each other, I'll turn to Representative Morrow.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think maybe legislative intent would trump Webster's, and I would ask the maker of the amendment, what do you mean by the word preserve?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would see that preserve would be keeping it in agriculture. Preserve has the more of a meaning of protect, almost as like sometimes can be viewed as a shield. Whereas preserve is more keeping, is what I would think as common language.
Yeah. So, all right. Any other discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I would totally agree with Representative Hansen that that's the intent here, and I would go along with that and support his oral amendment.
Any further discussion to the amendment to the amendment, the oral amendment to the amendment? Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, through the wonders of the internet, we're getting a dictionary definition here for people. Would you like me to read
it? Technology is an amazing thing. Please share with us.
All right. The definition for protect is to defend from injury, attack, etc. And I'm not sure what dictionary.com, I guess, is the source of this. And the definition for preserve is to keep alive or safe or to maintain.
Thank you. Representative Parcells.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I think that's helpful.
Wonderful, wonderful. Any other discussion to the oral amendment to the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. To the amendment, the A9 amendment. Any further discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we have, let's see, the amendments we have left to go through. We have the A5, the A10. The A10 is which one? Okay, the A5. We already did the A5, so we just have the A10 and the A13, right? Okay. So I'm going to move the A10 amendment. So I'm going to move the A10 amendment. And members, you know, I'm asking for plenty of feedback and dialogue here, and we're going to monitor this and see how this one goes. The A10 amendment, does everybody have it? Is there anybody that does not have it? Okay, I believe everybody has it in their possession. The A10 amendment, we have heard a great deal of testimony about unique circumstances. What about the case where an individual has less than 10 acres, but it's intensive farming? Just the scenarios just went on and on and on. And the whole thought process here for the A10 amendment is, how do we legislate for those circumstances here in St. Paul? We'll be running around in circles forever, potentially. That's my personal opinion, of course. And talking with other members and just looking for some, potentially, some workable solutions here, we drafted up the A10 amendment. And basically what this does is on line 1.7, it adds, at first it talks on 1.6 about consisting of 10 acres or more, or a nursery or greenhouse, and then it adds, of course, the or that meets the intensive use criteria under section 273.13. That's offers some clarification. And then in the event that someone who is actively farming and for whatever reason they don't qualify or the assessor denies their application, what can they do next? And so if you look on page 3, subdivision 17, it offers an appeal process for that individual where if they're denied the application, well, then they could turn to the County Board of Appeal, the County Commissioners, and ask them to reevaluate, take a look at that, and weigh in. And my thought process here is, again, who better to make those decisions? Us here up in St. Paul or individuals at the county level that know the specific circumstances? And that's where, again, we talk about the importance of local control. We're looking for balance there as well to where we have this program. And in the event it doesn't cover a specific circumstance, that there is an avenue that the applicant can take if they fully disagree. And that decision will be made at the local level versus here at St. Paul. So that's... I guess that's the background. I will look for questions or comments or Representative Morrow.
Well, Mr. Chair, I see that Representative Hansen probably has 273.13 in front of him, and it might help the committee to know what the intensive use criteria are.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, would you like to comment, please?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Morrow. It looks like 273.13 subdivision 23F goes on. It's got five or four subpoints to it. So it's kind of long. If you want me to read it, I could, but
condensed version, maybe?
Real estate of less than 10 acres, Mr. Chair, for drying or storage of grain or storage of machinery or equipment used to support agricultural activities on other parcels of property operated by the same farming entity, as a nursery, provided that only those acres used to produce nursery stock are considered agricultural land. For livestock or poultry confinement, provided that land that is used only for pasturing and grazing does not qualify. Or for market farming, for the purpose of this paragraph, market farming means the cultivation of one or more fruits or vegetables or production of animal or other agricultural products for sale to local markets by the farmer or an organization with which the farmer is affiliated.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Mr. Hines, do you have anything to add to there for clarification?
Mr. Chairman, no, I don't. That was the what we were referencing in drafting this was those four points that the Representative Hansen read from.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hines. Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this amendment because it thoroughly addresses the issues that I had with the small, the truck farm operations and so forth. And I think it's important. But I do have a further question on the subdivision 17, the appeal process. And I'm not familiar with the section 274.13, if Mr. Hines would like to just cover that a little bit, if it gives a further explanation of the appeal process in that section, or if an appeal would end at the County Board of Appeal in those circumstances.
Okay. So a great question. Thank you, Representative Schmansky. Mr. Hines or Mr. Sullivan? Mr. Hines, would you like to field the Representative Schmansky's question about line 3.5 under the appeals process, 274.13? We're asking for clarification. Does the appeal process, what does that mean exactly? Does it stop at the county board?
Mr. Chairman, it would stop at the county board, although virtually any property tax decision is appealable to the tax court, the state tax court, and I would believe this would continue to be appealable to them, but at the county board there is just the one stop, because this language does not have the appeal first go to the local board, which is the normal property tax appellate procedure, is to go to the local board first and then you can appeal that to the county board. But this particular step calls for the appeal to go directly to the county board.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. That raises a point then. As I recall, the County Board of Appeal is the final stop. You start with your township, city, to the county board. Does this mean then that this appeal could only be done once a year? Because I think they only meet really once a year in this entire appeal process. Or would this be a separate, different kind of appeal?
Good question as well. Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe that's right, that the county board does just meet the one time. It doesn't just mean one meeting, but one series of meetings or whatever, and they would have to address this at that time.
Representative Anderson? Any other discussion? Representative Hansen.
Well, they're looking at the law book. Mr. Chair, I'll ask a question about that subdivision 17. I think that having the appeal to the county board acting as the County Board of Appeal, can put pressure on the assessor to approve. The denial may be something that wouldn't be that politically popular to deny an appeal, whereas there are other models that we have out there in the state government. I think the Board of Water and Soil Resources, when there's wetland certification problems, they have a technical evaluation panel, a TEP panel, where they bring in the professional experts that may be from an adjoining county, but they're not the local elected officials. They're the experts in that area that could evaluate, but they don't have a piece of the decision, or they're not representing that area. And so I think, and I've talked with you about this, but that may be, and I don't think Bowser is here today, but that may be a piece where you can provide a third-party professional evaluation on the appeal rather than having solely fall on the county board, who may be inclined to approve all appeals to bring property into Green Acres.
So a very good point. And Mr. Hagen, could you comment on that, please?
Mr. Chair, I guess primarily I'd like to urge the committee to not adopt this amendment. A lot of what got the state in so much trouble on Green Acres in the first place was inconsistent application from one county to the next. We had some counties that I know of, at least one county board that passed a resolution that would prohibit Green Acres in their county, which last time I checked, the county board doesn't have authority over the state of Minnesota, but in spite of that, they did that. I'm concerned that it might become too political, as Representative Hansen alluded to. I think the possibility exists where some counties may not want to lose the tax base and they wouldn't approve of Green Acres applications. There certainly are numerous applications right now, potentials for appeal. We actually, at the legislature, is required, because of inconsistent application of laws, they required the department to give training to local boards of appeal and equalization, as well as a year or so ago they added the requirement they had to have training for county boards of appeal and equalization. So I think it's imperative for the legislature to know that the laws are being adapted uniformly throughout the state, and I'm concerned that you might, because of political pressures or just desires to not erode the tax base or just who knows what reason, you'd have a lot of inconsistent applications and we'd be back here again discussing Green Acres and Rural Preserve, which none of us ever want to do again, I'm thinking. If the committee feels strongly, and I'll probably get reprimanded severely by offering this, but if the committee feels strongly, you need an appeal opportunity, mindful of the fact that you currently have local appeal, county board of appeal, and tax court. If you do feel strongly you need one, I'd recommend the Commissioner of Revenue be that point of appeal. So if the property owners do not receive Green Acres, they think they're entitled to appeal to the Commissioner of Revenue, would be mindful and knowledgeable of the requirements and provisions of the Green Acres and Rural Preserve programs.
So Mr. Hagen, to this point, we heard numerous examples of where an individual is very much in farming and would be considered a farm in most of our thoughts, our opinions, but yet they do not qualify for Green Acres. How do we address that? What suggestions would there be? Because, again, it's just example after example. And so that's what we're trying to find a workable solution here to encompass those individuals as well. Because we have scenarios where you may have individuals that are growing specifically for a local farmer's market that won't have 10 acres. Or, again, there's numerous examples. So how do we, as legislators, okay, I put you on the spot here a little bit, how do we address those scenarios?
Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, the assessors, and certainly with the department's guidance, are following the Green Acres laws as they are written. And as you know, at the present time, properties of less than 10 acres do not qualify. I understand with the amendment that could change. I am not aware of any properties that legitimately should have qualified for Green Acres that were brought to our attention that we were unable to resolve the issue. For the most part, the problems we heard, the complaints we heard, were primarily properties that had maybe at one time been farmed, but years ago the people quit farming, planted into trees. We heard instances where the property had never been farmed, in fact contained no farmland, and was getting Green Acres, which led to a lot of the problems when the 2A, 2B, and the Green Acres legislation was enacted. So.
Okay. We're going to, if we can, I've got a question or two here from members, and then I'd like to share with you some different examples of what was brought forward, if the members would like to share those. And I'd like your take on those, if I could, please. Okay. First, we have Representative Hansen. You have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And, I'm looking at the poultry confinement, and just I'll use myself as an example. So I live in South St. Paul, and if I split my lot and put a chicken coop in the backyard that I use exclusively and intensively for raising chickens, would then I be able to get Green Acres on that property?
So there's an example. Mr. Hagen?
Mr. Chair, I hope they get easier. we do have some criteria established for intensive uses. I'm guessing a chicken coop in the backyard would not qualify, but Ms. Fish, are you familiar with the intensive use? You want to speak to that?
Reluctantly? Yeah, that's right. So, thank you, Mr. Hagen. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Andrea Fish, and other than representing Mr. Hagen, I also represent the Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. The intensive provisions of law, typically what you're looking at is a larger livestock or poultry confinement on small acreage. Certainly the truck farming, the market farming, there's a lot of different qualifications that one would look at, the income derived per acre, things like that. To my knowledge, and as far as I know anyway, since 1967, we've always looked at properties that have more than 10 acres for Green Acres. So we've never had to make those determinations yet for properties with less than 10 acres used agriculturally for Green Acres purposes.
Okay. Stick around here. I think we have a few questions. Or, pardon me? Oh, Representative Hansen, follow-up.
And a follow-up in that same, so this is for, in the amendment, real estate of less than 10 acres. So that's what we're talking about here is less than 10 acres. So let's say I have a 10-acre property in southern Dakota County, and I have a grain bin, a small grain bin, or a shed that I buy at Walmart, and I put corn in that to feed my chickens. So that is a storage of grain or storage of machinery or equipment to support agricultural activities. On other properties, other parcels, let's change it away from southern Dakota County. Let's say I put a granary in my backyard to store corn. Because I own farmland with my brother in Freeborn County, does that then bring me in to Green Acres if I'm storing corn? If I go to the Walmart, pick up a small building and store corn in that, would that be the grain storage that falls in under subdivision FI?
Ms. Fish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, if it's determined that the use of that property is intensive and it meets those other criteria, that it's in conjunction with other property that you're farming, that would qualify as an intensive agricultural pursuit, and under the proposed amendment that would potentially qualify you for Green Acres enrollment.
Thank you. Representative Ward.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't want to stop the dialogue here, but I would also like to hear from the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union on how they feel about this this amendment as well. So, I mean, if we're still dialoguing with the Department of Revenue folks, and that's important, but I also think it's important that we hear from Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau as well.
Absolutely, absolutely, and we'll call them up once we're done with the department. All right.
Yep.
We had heard, Representative Schmansky, did you have some examples that we want clarification on?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had one example of a property owner in Washington County who had two parcels. One was a 60-acre parcel. He had an ag homestead on it, and that was classified as Green Acres property. But he had another parcel of 10 acres or thereabouts, also homesteaded with his other property. but he was denied Green Acres benefit on that parcel. And I'm wondering, because we don't apparently don't aggregate acreage in a township, is that a problem, or how could we address that issue?
Ms. Fish or Mr. Hagen?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the property, if it was contiguous property, it would all qualify. Once you established the ag classification and the ag homestead classification, if it was contiguous to that property, it would qualify. If it was a non-contiguous property, if the 10 acres was separated from the ag parcel, it would have to, under current law, have contain at least 10 acres that were being used for farm purposes.
Representative Schimanski.
If I may clarify, the smaller parcel, the 10 acres or less, was intensively operated for as a farm agricultural pursuit. Should then it be classified as Green Acres?
Mr. Hagen.
Chair, under current law, very likely, if it was 10 acres used intensively, it should have qualified, I'm guessing. If there was a house on it, as sometimes happens, or some other use of the property, it would not have met the 10-acre requirement.
Representative Schimanski?
Okay. And that would have been the situation. There is a house on the 10-acre parcel.
Yep.
But, again, the house was incidental to the farming operation. So that's why, I've pursued this amendment here with the chair of the committee. If for all intents and purposes, this 10-acre parcel is producing more income for this farmer than the other 60 acres.
So, Mr. Hagen, to that point then, for an example such as the one Representative Schimanski came up, and here in the eyes of the farmer and others that are thinking, that should probably be able to qualify for Green Acres, what's the next process for that farmer then to challenge the decision of the assessor?
Mr. Chair, in the situation Representative Schimanski outlined, there would be no, they could certainly appeal to the county board, who would hopefully make the determination according to law, and they could appeal to tax court, where they would undoubtedly lose, because in that instance, if you had 10 acres and part of the house or part of the acreage contained a house, the way we administer the property tax, they'd have to carve out a minimum 1-acre parcel for the house, garage, and 1 acre, which would leave 9 acres, and there'd be no way under current law that you could give Green Acres in that situation.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Schimanski, follow up there. Representative Bruce Sanderson, would you feel comfortable at this time talking about the example with the ducks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment, the A13th amendment, which I had Mr. Hines get ready for me. And it's in front of you. As it relates to this here, a gentleman was concerned about the fact that the way the law now stands is that the only way that game birds or waterfowl, which he raises for basically breeding and selling purposes, the only way that he would qualify on a small acreage of land, even though it was intensively used for the purpose of raising those game birds, that it was only designated for a shooting preserve or licensed shooting preserve, as the language says. So he was asking why, as a person with this situation of raising and breeding game birds for sale purposes under intensive agriculture, as the language states, why he couldn't be recognized for Green Acres also.
Okay, and I just remind everybody we're still on the A10 amendment, but I think that dialogue goes into the discussion that we have here currently. So, Mr. Hagen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm a little, a lot of these are hard. They're very complicated, which is why we have a lot of the controversy. My sense is you raised game birds for human consumption, and it was intensive. I'm thinking that should be, in my mind, should be an agricultural activity. I'm not sure if that fit under the definition of livestock or poultry.
Ms. Fish, would you like to weigh in on this? Once again, reluctantly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't waste too much time, but I'm actually familiar with the similar, if not same, scenario in which the birds are actually raised for sale to collectors and zoos. So there is a difference in the use. Poultry, of course, is an agricultural pursuit, and the type of fowl might consider an agricultural pursuit. But the way that we do have the statute written, that it's an agricultural use for sale, again, typically, as John said, for human consumption. There is a difference in the use of that property in that situation.
Okay. So raising animals for zoos would not qualify then for green acres?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
So, Mr. Chair, do we have to then put into law something similar to this here where it says for the shooting preserve? Is that why it's so narrowly designated that way? What happens if you do get in a situation where it is raised for the purposes of human consumption or for breeding purposes to, say, I know people that have moved into this state that are from another country, China, and people who raise these as exotic birds to ship back or use for breeding purposes somewhere else. Will we have to then include that kind of language to designate a purpose for that situation?
Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my short answer is yes, you probably would. Right now, the ag definition is pretty narrow, I think, or the way we interpret it's used for grains or crops for animals or for human consumption. I would urge you not to depart too far from that, because then you get into issues of raising dogs, raising fish for aquariums, all manner of things. And we always need to be mindful of the fact that the ag classification is a huge benefit to the property owners. And once they're in Green Acres, it's even a larger benefit. And so I think we want to be careful departing too much from the basic of what agriculture is and what the benefit is. The assessors oftentimes tell me that people come in and say, how many ducks do I need or how many chickens do I need? And the real farmers aren't asking that question. It's the people that are trying to get the tax benefits. And I'm very concerned about going into that pet or the exotic animals or birds or snakes or all manner of things. I think we'd make a very, very complex situation even more complex.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, a follow-up first. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hagan, you'd referenced that you would suggest not incorporating this amendment in its totality or just the provisions on the appeals process.
Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, if we're talking about the appeals process and the less than 10 acres, I feel quite strongly about the appeals process. The less than 10 acres is a policy decision which we could certainly implement if you chose to go down that path. Chris Raddatz mentioned to me too, if I might add, with respect to the local boards or the county boards, that several years ago the department was charged with hearing appeals of horses, and maybe Mr. Raddatz will testify that when he comes down, but he wanted to make sure I got on the record that there's already a precedent for the Department of Revenue on tricky situations like that, and his point was well taken, that assessors in fact are employed by the county boards, and of course there's a employer-employee relationship there, and he thought the Department of Revenue would be a better position to have a neutral and proper determination on issues of conflicts or potential green acres.
Yeah. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess I just wanted to clarify that the provisions in this amendment, House File 12-810 on page 1, line 1.7, that meets the intent use criteria under section 273.13 subdivision 23 paragraph F, which is, you know, in the agricultural classification, simply applying that to the green acres provisions then should not cause us any additional problems. Am I correct?
Hagan.
Mr. Chair, it might cause problems, but none that I'm sure the department or the assessors couldn't handle. It would certainly be an expansion, but it would be achievable.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Szymanski. Okay. All right. We have Mr. Drew, did you want to comment on this amendment, the A-10 amendment? So the A-10 amendment about, the use and...
For the record, my name is Ron Druden, and I live in North Branch Township of Isanti County. Chairman, committee... I would call your attention to the purpose argument that you had earlier.
Yes, sir.
The whole purpose of this legislation is to preserve farms. So in this particular instance before you now, I think the compelling question is, what is a farm? And it clearly illustrates that there's a difference between protecting or preserving farms. Preserving, I think, a better choice than preserving ag land. In this particular argument.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have a question. Hold on here.
Representative Swazinski.
Chairman, what would be, you know, if we're looking at some conformity things also, what would be the definition of a farm from the federal level that we would look at, you know, from the 10-acre point and try to, you know, instead of looking at something separate and above, what is it, what are the rules that they would look at, and how do we apply those here in the state? So
do we have anybody that could answer that question as far as the definition? Mr. Drude.
I worked on the rules, promulgating the rules for the RIM program, and during that promulgation, we had options of definitions of farmland. The federal definition of farmland is much more extensive than the state definition. In fact, I was really surprised that the state definition that came out of revenue for defining farmland for RIM purposes, I thought, was overly narrow. But the federal definition goes to dozens of different specific, including raising fur bearers, etc., things that we ordinarily might not consider to be agriculture. But I can't quote it offhand.
Representative Swazinski. No?
That's it.
All right. Okay. Okay. We do have another member here that would like to testify, another person here that would like to testify. Ms. Pinky? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Gloria Pinky. Excuse me. I'm a manager in Dakota County Assessing Services, but I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. Dakota County, as many of you know, have been in, involved in Green Acres since the program began, so we have many, many parcels in Green Acres. I think I want to assure Representative Peterson, or excuse me, Hansen, if he puts a chicken coop in his backyard, he probably won't get to, Green Acres in Dakota County, because that would not be intensively used, and it doesn't meet the 10-acre requirement. The 10-acre requirement of being used in the production for sale of agricultural products has been at least a threshold that our property owners and taxpayers can understand. We can tell them you need 10 acres used in the production for sale of an agricultural product in order to get the agricultural classification. To get Green Acres currently, it has to be the primary use of the parcel. And we have many, many truck farmers in Dakota County, many who get ag classification on smaller tracts of land, but they wouldn't qualify for Green Acres unless they meet that minimum. So the 10 acres is at least something that's a guide that's not judgmental on the part of assessors as we're looking at parcels. You got 10 acres, it's used in the production for sale of agricultural products, and that's a threshold that we can all explain to our taxpayers. If it gets down to the point of what is intensive, are 5 cows better than 10 cows, or how many do I need, that threshold has been very important to us. The high-intensity crops, and we have a lot of those as well, that could be strawberry farms. Or, again, I'll use truck gardening. We have a lot of market gardeners in our county. They work very, very hard, and I don't think anyone here will argue that what they produce is a farm product for sale. If those, if they have at least 10 acres in the production for sale, 10 acres in the production for sale of agricultural products, that's a guideline that we can use to, both for the ag classification and eventually for Green Acres. It just hasn't been a big issue. If we try and define every intensive use that some creative individuals could come up with on less than 10 acres, that could get, it would get complicated in our county, and I've been working on it for 42 years, let alone statewide, and have everybody decide what does intensive mean. Being consistent in each county, I think, is critical, and I think all our counties have tried to do that. Where we get in the problem is Joe owns 10 acres here and 20 acres in that county and somewhere else, and when we do it different. So inconsistency has been an issue, I think, in the past, so I would encourage you to try and keep as much judgment out of the process as possible. And that's also my fear with the appeal process in this amendment, in that if county boards are given that charge, all of you sitting around this table know how much impact constituents have, and that puts them in a really difficult place. They're not tax administrators, and they don't know what their adjoining county board may be doing. I really encourage you not to dump that back on county boards, and they, I have all the respect in the world, but my county board may not see things exactly like Goodhue County or Scott County or Carver County or Northern County. So while I appreciate the effort in giving property owners a right to appeal, I think that appeal is present in that they can go to the tax court. It's a big decision whether they want to spend money to do that, or time or effort, or just the intimidation of having to go to court or potentially hiring an attorney. They have that right, but only certain property owners really want to go that far to get a tax benefit. So while it's there, it may not be the most and I think all counties try to encourage their taxpayers, come and talk to the assessor. Show us why you think you should qualify. What's your income? What else do you do? How much agricultural products have you sold? Is it production for sale of an agricultural product, and is it significant, or is it just a hobby type deal? So I'll let it go with that, and thank you very much for your time. And
so, Ms. Pinky, what you're saying as assessors, you do have the individuals that we're discussing of, you know, the unique situations that we're talking about right now. You're saying that if these individuals come to you and bring that information and basically plead their case to the assessor, you take all that into consideration when you make your decisions?
Mr. Chair and members, in Dakota, we absolutely do, and we try and encourage them to bring any information you've got. Sometimes they'll say, well, it's a bad crop year, so I didn't get my apples this year or whatever. Say, okay, I can understand that. Bring me your information from the previous 2 years, and we'll look at that. And I'm sure the department can encourage others. We've been in it so long, it's kind of second nature to Dakota County and the Metro, but many counties in greater Minnesota are just getting into the program, and they're scared of it. So I think if working together through the Association of Assessing Officers, if we can encourage other counties to ask property owners for their information, help convince us why you think you should be getting this special tax program, which it is. Show us your income. Show us what you've sold. And sometimes people say, well, I don't have the receipts. I said, well, then bring us your, and we've seen them, the little black books where they wrote down where they sold a bushel of whatever to someone. We look at all of that, and we in the assessor's office then have to make our best judgment call that, okay, we think you do qualify for agricultural use on your property, or sorry, you just don't. This isn't significant enough to make that judgment call.
We did have another example. If I can ask you one more question here, okay. Please. Another example where an individual said that they had 10 acres, a little over 10 acres, and that they qualified. And then there was upgrades to a road or the right-of-way or whatever the case, whether it's utilities or the road. And so they no longer had 10 acres. They had less than 10 acres. In a scenario like that, where it was no, it wasn't of any of their doing, you know, out of their control, how would something like that be looked upon, I guess?
Mr. Chair and members, that's obviously a little more difficult question. The small parcel, the smaller size acreage, and it's the only property owned by that individual, are obviously the problem ones for all the counties. I shouldn't say that. They're the biggest problem for Dakota County, and I think many of the other counties, because they are borderline whether or not they should be agricultural or whether they should be green acres. I am leaning towards the way, and I don't remember any of those situations exactly. I'd look at what the remaining 8 or 9 acres are used for. Is it cropped? Is it a hay field, which is difficult for some of us to say, well, a hay field, and you sell bales of hay to somebody who rents it. Yes, it is ag use. And many times the appearance is that somebody's cutting your grass for you. So there's a difference, I think, in what has been the use and the intensity on the parcel. I'm thinking if it's less than 10 acres in agricultural use, we would probably remove green acres from that parcel, remove ag classification, and whoever decided to put the road in and acquire that property, it's part of the negotiation tool that buyer and seller have at that point. If you're going to have a bigger tax impact, that's part of the settlement that may need to be worked out with the authority who is acquiring the road. And we have had one like that.
Yes. And so, you know, my point in all this is how do we simplify this, but also have enough leeway to the professionals, the decision makers that are going out there to take into consideration some of this. And I understand, I hear the argument on the other side as well, and most of us will understand, we have seen examples, we have heard about examples where people have done, well, some less than, you know, above the table type activities in order to try to get green acre status. And so it's a fine balance between the individuals that are straight up, yes, it's intensive farming practices, and therefore I should qualify, but I might be at 9.98 acres and not 10, or whatever the case. And then you have others that say, well, you know what, I'm running a nursery over here. And no, you're not. Those are just trees that grew up, you know, wild growth on your parcel. To where you, the professional, the assessors, have the leeway to make those determinations as well. I mean, we're trying to cover all of this. Ms. Pinky?
Mr. Chair and members, I understand the dilemma. Believe me, I understand the dilemma. A lot of it, again, I think, could go back to look at, is there 10 acres in the production for sale of agricultural products? If so, what have you sold over the last 1 year, 2 year, 3 years? Let that decision and review up to the person making the review and the decision. Income information is private or confidential. We don't share that with anybody who comes in the office. If people give us copies of the farm schedule, their income tax. That's one thing that we often use. How much money did you make from the production for sale of your agricultural product? And if they have trees growing up and they haven't sold any, then it's not production for sale of an agricultural product. That has been a big tool for us. And we were in the same situation of many of my colleagues across the state 10, 15 years ago when we too in Dakota started. So now I'm talking about my personal experience and not the association, so I don't want to get in trouble with my colleagues up there.
Please.
We were in that same situation about in 1995 or 1996, where we reviewed all of the green acre parcels in our county. The law doesn't require it to be reviewed every year, but we made a our process was to review any that were borderline in each year. And we took a lot of parcels off green acres in 94, 95, 96 that we felt were not farms. They didn't have the 10 acres in agricultural production for sale of agricultural products. We removed green acres for the next assessment. We did not collect deferred green acres because the property owner hadn't done anything different. They were doing the very same thing they had done for many years. So we took them off green acres, put them back on the actual market value for the upcoming assessment, which gave them a year out to plan on what they might have to experience in a higher tax bill. Almost all of those were the smaller parcels, 20 acres, I would say 20 acres or less in size. Is that a farm or not? And Mr. Chair, members, last week when I was listening in the audience, I heard somebody say, well, maybe we should define a farm. And I thought, well, go for it, because we've been trying to do that for many, many years, and that's not on your agenda today, but it is very, very difficult. What is a farm? Is it a five-acre hayfield? Is it a 10-acre hayfield? What constitutes a farm? And it's pretty hard. And it's been talked about many, many years over all the years I've been at Dakota, and nobody's come up with a really good definition. And I don't know that you have the time to do that this year, but it's a wonderful goal. In the meantime, I think leaving it up to the professionals in the assessment profession, with the department guiding us and watching over us, to make sure we're doing things consistently and the same is so important. The smaller tracts of land are a problem, as people who know, who took those parcels who didn't have 10 acres in ag production off Green Acres since 2008. It gets people's attention, and they don't like it. But we need to, who do you want to give the tax reduction to? Are small parcels of whatever size, 20 acres, 10 acres, are they true farmers, and should they get a reduction unless they are intensively used? Truck gardening, poultry operation, hog operations, where they have thousands of critters available. Most people would look at that and, what are you going to call it if it's not agricultural? So those seem to be, I don't think those are our issues. Our issues are the smaller tracts of land. They have some non-productive acres. They might have they need the 10 acres, and that at least is one thing that we can focus on. If you remove that, it gets hard.
So thank you. We do have a couple questions for the testifier, Representative Hansen and Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Pinky. So right now, under current law, if I said I want to put chickens in my backyard, or I have chickens in my backyard, you would tell me that I don't have 10 acres in agriculture, and that would be the end of the conversation.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that would be the start of the conversation. I would then ask you to prove to me how many chickens you had, how many did you sell on the open market, and how much income tax did you pay on your chickens. And then I would decide if you're intensively using that or not. I might also check with, in your case, with your city to see if they gave you a permit to put your chicken coop out there.
Mr. Chair, and I don't have any chickens in my backyard, but if the amendment passed, Ms. Pinky, which says that you could go under 10 acres, then would that conversation that I or neighbors or anybody else, would that be a longer conversation? Because I could look at some words under that subdivision that's being cited where I think I could probably extend that conversation. Would that be the case?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, it might be the case, but I think it's going to lead to the same path. You're not going to get Green Acres on your chicken coop unless it is a big operation, you're making a significant amount of income, and you're paying income tax on your earnings for those chickens.
Mr. Chair, but it would take up your time.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Representative Hansen, it would, and it would take up yours as well.
I love the directness. Absolutely. Representative Hansen.
I would encourage the committee not to support this amendment. I think that we've spent a great deal of time here showing the weeds that we're getting into with chasing the options, and I can see even more options that I haven't brought up. So both the going under 10 acres and the appellate, I think, raise more questions than they answer.
But Representative Hansen, I thought this was such a great idea. I'm teasing. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pinky, just lay out a scenario. It's a parcel slightly less than 10 acres in a area with residential development all around it. 10 acres not in agricultural, zoned agricultural, 10 acres zoned agriculture, or 10 acres zoned for Green Acres due to intensive farming operation. What would the tax implications look like on something like that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Szymanski, you've used the word zoned for residential or zoned for something else. The Green Acre Program and the agricultural classification are totally separate items from local zoning. Assessors have to look at what a parcel is used for. Now, we may have your 8 or 10 acre parcel in the middle of an industrial park that is zoned by the local community as commercial or industrial. But if that 10 acres is a cornfield from row to row, that would be agricultural use and agricultural classification. Whether or not it would qualify for Green Acres, maybe or maybe not, depending on whether or not it's been in the family for at least 7 years or whether it's homestead or farmed with a homestead, then it may qualify for green acres. Chances are it would be agricultural classification if it's 10 acres, and that's the only use of it. But there are other requirements for green acres besides just the use.
Representative Szymanski.
Pardon my use of the wrong terminology there, but the issue I was asking about is, you know, the local assessor, if it's zoned agricultural, I mean, there is some tax advantage to the property owner to have that parcel, not zoned, but, you know, mm-hmm. listed as ag property. But is it subject to higher taxes if the community, the local government decided that it had a higher value than agricultural property, could it be taxed at a higher value?
Mr. Chair and Representative Szymanski, if the parcel qualifies for green acres, it first had to qualify for the agricultural classification. If it met both of those criteria, it would qualify for a lower, likely qualify for a lower tax value than if it were valued at its highest and best use, which is likely commercial, because it's in the middle of an industrial or commercial park. Also, depending, and that the amount of difference varies greatly throughout the state. In the metro, there's a difference, but it's getting a lot closer together between the ag value and the market value, as the market has been rather shallow for the last few years. So our market value on ag land and green acres is getting closer together. So depending on which community, where it's located, there may or may not be a significant difference between the green acre value and the actual value. In metro, it makes a huge difference, and in some growing communities as well. When parcels are in green acres, special local assessments are deferred while it's in the program. They do all have to be paid at some point in time if that sells for a commercial use. Then currently, 3 years deferred taxes, the difference between those two has to be paid along with any of the deferred special assessments. They're not limited to 3 years or if we go to 5 years or something else.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd like to thank Ms. Pinky for her testimony. I enjoy hearing from the people that are really out in the field implementing the things that we do here in St. Paul, so thank you. And I would just remind my fellow committee members that one of our objectives when starting this down this long road was to simplify as much as we could. And I just get the feeling that this amendment, although I understand where you're going with it, kind of leads us into an area of getting more complicated again. And I'm not so sure we want to go down that road.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I don't know if it's Representative Szymanski's amendment or whom, but at some point I think we're going to have to ask the Department of Revenue if there's a fiscal cost to this amendment, if the department is going to be asked to make determinations on what is and what isn't intensive use or qualifies here. I wouldn't put Mr. Hagen on the spot right now, but I would ask that a fiscal note be prepared for this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Morrow. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I have some concerns too about, as Representative Hansen said, getting into the weeds here. And it, I think that, you know, it's worth doing that if the benefits are great. But I guess I question how much benefit will be derived, and also looking at the negative side, if this is opening it up to further potential abuse in the future, and so we need to weigh that. I certainly understand the arguments that Representative Szymanski is bringing up about intensive agriculture. There's many legitimate cases out there where, you know, they really should be classified as agriculture. But, again, I'm concerned about the potential for fraud. And looking at the benefits, you know, if you're talking about a pretty small parcel of land already with 10 acres. I'm not sure how many we're talking about, even, you know, when we're talking about truck farms and things like that, how many are lower than the 10-acre limit that's currently there. I don't know if there's any statistics on that as far as, you know, how many are not qualifying just because of that 10-acre requirement. And also, if you're talking about such limited acreage, that's not that many acres that's subject to those tax obligations either. So, you know, I guess I've been more concerned about those more traditional farms that have, you know, numerous acres, you know, hundreds of acres of land. That's where it really becomes oppressive because of all the acreage they have to pay those taxes on. So, again, the benefits aren't as great for those with these smaller acreages being in green acres as it is for those more traditional farms with larger acreages. So I just wanted to express some of the concerns I have. I certainly understand your concerns, Representative Szymanski, but I guess weighing the pluses and minuses here, the potential for, you know, possibly opening up for possible abuse, and also the amount of a benefit that's derived statewide, I don't know if it's worth going through that and getting into the weeds and, again, opening it up to possible abuse.
All right. And just to that point, just to remind everybody, the A-10, I did move that. It is my amendment. And sometimes if you're wrong, you just submit that and you move on. Right, Mrs. Pinky?
Mr. Chair, it's your call.
So, again, I think, if anything, this opened up great dialogue to air that out. Members, I'm going to withdraw my A-10 amendment. All right. So I'm going to withdraw that. We have one other amendment, the A-13 amendment. Who would like to take that one? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw that amendment.
And the A-13 has been withdrawn as well. Members, to the bill. We have spent four full days on this. Does anybody have any comments? I do have does anybody have any questions or comments or at this point in time? Is there any? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank you for giving the opportunity to express my concerns on this. I think we've moved a long way. As we've talked before, you know, the question of potential unintended consequences, we may find something out as this goes on and through the steps, and that's what the legislative process provides. So, you know, I think we've taken a good crack at this, and it has many stops to go. So I appreciate your patience and indulgence in this.
Thank you. Any other, before I turn it over to the author, I do have, if someone could answer this question real quick. This note was passed out by a member person attending here, and it says, if a farmer is raising 20 acres of walnuts for harvest and no income for 20 years, how does this work? Could somebody, maybe one of the assessors or someone from the department, quickly, because we have 4 minutes, anybody want to... as you're moving up, I'll repeat the question one more time. And it says, if a farmer is raising 20 acres of walnuts for harvest and no income for 20 years, how does this work?
Ms. Pinky. Mr. Chair and members, I would look to what have you produced for sale and what have you raised, what have you paid income tax on. Now, whether that's right or wrong, I guess I don't know. I have never run into a circumstance where somebody had nothing but 20 acres of walnuts. They're not producing an agricultural product for sale. So I would say you come back when you start selling those and we'll talk again. But until that happens, it's just trees growing walnuts. It's not producing anything for sale.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could
I ask? Yes, Ms. Pinky.
What would the committee think we should do with that?
Oh, my goodness. Miss me.
I'm just...
Representative Szymanski.
It's part of the fruits and nuts discussion.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Representative Szymanski. Thank you. All right. Members, I think we're ready to vote. I believe we're ready to vote on this. Yeah? Fully informed. Representative Lemire, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair and members, I just want to say thank you for all the input. I think we worked together well. I think we created a bill that is a really good bill, and I'm proud to have my name on it. Representative Eakin, I thank you and your caucus. I thank members of the farmers, the representatives of the farming organizations, and the individuals from the MAAO, Department of Revenue, Mr. Hines, for all your help. Mr. Chair, members, I move HF 12 as amended be passed and referred to the Tax Committee with the recommendation to pass.
Representative Lemire renews his motion that House File 12, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Yeah, all right. So we did have. Pardon me. Members, we did have two other Green Acres bills. I had talked to the authors of those bills about leaving those within the jurisdiction of this committee and just making the motion. I make the motion to hold those over for possible inclusion. All right? That doesn't need a vote, but again, they'll remain in possession of the committee. Okay? So with that, anything else? Oh, yeah, and just a quick reminder, we do have State of the State tomorrow, so please make sure you're here. We're going to start on time. We're going to end early so everybody can have plenty of time to get over there and listen to Governor Dayton. All right, so please, out of respect to everybody, be here on time so we can get going on time, and we're going to move quickly. So with that, meeting adjourned. Thank you.